and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Tuesday, December 29th, 2015. Almost at the end of the year here. We got our last week, our last couple of broadcasts today and tomorrow. And for those of you who missed yesterday or didn't hear, we're going to be broadcasting tomorrow. And then we will have Thursday and Friday will be dark. And we will be back in January. You got to flip here. We'll be back in January, coming out of the year strong, out of the new year strong.
You know, and I want to thank everyone. Once again, we're a listener-supported broadcast. We do have sponsors, of course, but we're very selective about our sponsors, but we're a listener-supported broadcast. I want to thank everyone for making 2015 such a great year and helping us get through and go push forward to 2016. I think you're going to see some really great stuff happening in 2016, but more importantly, you're going to see some alternatives here. If things go down, what we're trying to do is maintain communication at all levels. Now, obviously, because of the subject matter, folks, we're not going to get into how we're doing it, but you will know, and we are doing a lot of things behind the scenes that require a lot of weird things, not weird things, but inventive things. How's that? So we, you know, to stay on the air and to keep giving information out, even though, just to stay one step ahead of the thought police, so to speak. And believe me, there will be censorship in 2016. There will be problems in 2016 like you've never seen before. I truly believe that. Before we get into this, I do want to mention portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you, speaking of sponsors, brought to you by AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. What a great company. Folks, you need to prepare, and preparation is key. I mean, that is number one. Number one is God, of course, in the gospel, but you should obviously know that. Preparation, however, is key in any crisis. If you're snowed in, if you're boxed in by the weather, you know, by rivers that Joe, you're talking about the overflows. My goodness. Be self-sufficient. American Survival Wholesale is your one-stop shop for all things survival related. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Go shopping there and have at it, because man, they have a lot of good sales. Now, before the break, you were talking, Joe, real quick about the particular gun bans. Police in California can seize guns without prior notice beginning on January 1st. Now, a lot of things begin in California, and we're seeing this right now. Family members, for example, in California, and this is important for people, especially listening in California, you better listen to this. And for those people who think it can't happen in your state, please understand it can. Family members who believe a loved one poses a danger to themselves or others will be able to ask police to seek a temporary gun violence restraining order, a GVRO. Put that in your new lexicon for 2016. Gun violence restraining order from a judge beginning the 1st of January. The order would allow police to seize the person's guns for 21 days. Very interesting numbers. Just saying. Lawmakers approved the legislation known as AB, that is Alpha Beta 1014. And Governor Jerry Brown, of course, Jerry Brown signed it into law after the 2014 shooting near the University of California in Santa Barbara, in which 6 people were killed, 14 injured. Now, before the shootings, deputies had visited the shooter. His name was Elliot Roger, after his parents raised concerns about his mental health and online rants against women. Deputies at the time, however, concluded that Rogers, who was 22 years old at the time, was not a risk. They decided they had no basis to search his apartment, where he had amassed guns, ammunition, and knives. That, according to the radio station, or the station, KPP or KPCC out of California. The bottom line is this: you've got all of this backdoor regulation. Now people think, okay, we're gonna wake up one day and all of a sudden, semi-automatic weapons are gonna be banned and, you know, there's gonna be a gun registry and stuff. Yeah, perhaps. But there's a lot of things that'll happen beforehand, and we're seeing it happen right now in this. This is, Now, just imagine, having a dispute with your wife, or maybe your sister-in-law, maybe your brother-in-law, whatever, and you say, you know what, just leave me alone, or you hack them off somehow, right? Imagine how this could be misused and abused. They could get a court order on you, and the judge would have 21 days to determine whether, hey, is this guy a threat to himself or others? But see, it's pre-crime measures, Joe. And I'm just going to turn it back over to you. It's pre-crime measures is what we're looking at. And then combine that with the other stuff that's going on in the background with gun confiscation.
Yeah, beginning January 1st, police in California may confiscate firearms from gun owners thought to be a danger to themselves or others without giving the owner any notice. As you said, this was the gun violence restraining orders go into effect on New Year's Day. According to KPCC, gun violence restraining orders could be issued without prior knowledge of the person. In other words, a judge could issue the order without even hearing from the person in question if there are reasonable grounds to believe that the person is a threat based on accounts from the family and police. Since the order can be issued without the gun owner ever being present to defend himself or herself, confiscation can commence without any notice to the gun owner once the order is issued. It says, to be fair, Los Angeles Police Department Assistant Chief Michael Moore does not use the word confiscate when talking about confiscating firearms. Rather, Moore says the law gives us a vehicle to cause the person to surrender their weapons. KPCC reports that California law already bans people from possessing guns if they've committed a violent crime or an involuntary, or were involuntarily mm-hmm. committed to a mental That's health right. facility. And now, with the gun violence restraining orders, California law allows judges to bar people from possessing guns even if they have not committed a crime or were involuntarily committed. This because Gun Owners of California Executive Director Sam Padres warns that the GVROs may create a situation where law-abiding gun owners are put in jeopardy. And you can imagine how this can be taken, as you said,
It has so much potential for abuse, Joe. It really does. And under the auspices, ostensibly for self-protection, or for the good of the people. And I understand, you know, the shooting that was referenced back in 2014, it stunk to high heaven, as many of these shootings do. They stink to high heaven. There's always problems. And you know, what we're seeing, and I do submit what we're seeing today with many of the shooters, are mind control subjects, MK Ultra, if you wish, subjects. And people may laugh that off and say, oh, that's impossible, or whatever. But if you think about all of the testing that's been documented, confirmed, declassified, published, made known to the American people about how unsuspecting Americans were subjected to mind control, unsuspecting Americans, or even suspected, you know, Americans who volunteered or that were prisoners that were forced into these mind control experiments. Ladies and gentlemen, these mind control and let me add this as well, the mind control and social engineering combined today, whether it be through television, radio waves, and other chemtrailing, in addition to, well, the aggregate of things. Folks, the Americans right now, the West, are the most mind controlled population, not just in the world, but in the history of the world when you really think about it.
Yeah.
The most socially engineered. And you know, I love it when I get hate mail saying, oh, enough with the Nazis already. I just think that's kind of funny because people are not making the connection. And I do need to be clearer about certain elements, but it's, when you understand that the programs, programs that were done by the CIA were Nazi programs that did, where did all the people go, for example? That, do you think that, you know, the mind control experiments stopped after the church committee, after the no, they kept going. So think about it this way. Let's say you had 10,000, and I would suspect that's a conservative estimate because there are centers all over the country, but 10,000 in the world too. But 10,000 subjects of victims, I'll use that term, victims of mind control experimentation. especially those at a young age. Where do you think they are now? What has happened to them? And under what conditions do they currently exist? And I submit to you that many of the shooters are the artifacts, or at least their psychological dispositions represent the artifacts of that psychological experimentation. So what we're seeing today, ladies and gentlemen, is the fruits of that. And that's only going to increase. So when you look at the eyes of a what's that Holmes guy, you look in the eyes of these shooters, and you could see,
James, Holmes from
crazy,
Colorado.
Right? You see just nothing but crazy there, right? Well, I submit that there is something more. I think there's trauma-based mind control. I think there's other types of mind control. Just watch the Manchurian Candidate, and you'll get the idea. It didn't stop. It continues. Where are these people? Russ Dizdar talks about it in the seminars that he's been talking about, So yeah, all of this combined. So I'm not sure how I started down that road.
All right. Yeah, I don't know where you want to go from here, but this is something we talked about last week. About the Real ID Act.
Yes.
This is an article from Fox News. Terminal confusion. DHS push could make some IDs invalid for flying. And this starts January 1st also. But TSA may stop accepting driver's licenses from some states based on whether they are compliant with the Real ID Act, originally passed in 2005, meant to tighten standards for government-issued IDs and driver's license. It banned federal agencies from accepting any IDs that don't meet the bar. That means TSA technically shouldn't accept driver's license from certain states once the law is in full effect. While Washington let the rules slide for years, the Department of Homeland Security could start to enforce them in 2016 and is pushing states to comply. And that has the potential to cause confusion, not to mention headaches at the airport. Many states are still not in full compliance, and different states are operating on different timetables. Here's what to expect in the months ahead. DHS is enforcing the legislation in stages. Currently, it's only requiring enhanced IDs for access to federal facilities. Some states have extensions, but those are set to expire next year in January, June, and October, depending on the state. The bigger controversy over what comes next, as early as 2016, DHS is expected to start enforcing ID requirements for air travel. That means anyone from states flouting the ID rules would not be able to use their driver's license to board a plane and would have to use a passport or other accepted forms of ID. Now, these forms of ID are based on the Real ID Act, which talks about more extensive measures in the IDs, from biometric identification to RFID chips inside the actual IDs like they have inside the passports.
And it's the chip, isn't it? I mean, it's the chip and the license, ultimately, tangibly, it's the chip. And then from there, it's the information on the chip. Or when you say the Real ID Act and the licenses, I think from your research, what have you found? Is it the information on the bar? Is it the bar, or is it the chip inside the license, or is it both?
Well, it's both. These are, as I said, the Real ID Act. This was passed in 2005. It was supposed to go in effect in 2008, 2009,
right.
And they've been pushing it back. But when they say non-compliant states, they mean states that have driver's license that don't have the biometric, and I'm not sure what the terminology is here. I'm looking for it. But that don't have the enhanced ID,
There you go.
And that enhanced ID is the restrictions in the states that follow these are the ones that don't follow the enhanced ID laws are the ones that aren't going to need a passport if you get on a plane. But it has to do with biometric identification and RFID chips inside the actual license.
All right.
Well, chips inside the license.
There's a total of 9 states who are impacted by this, correct? I mean, I'm looking here. And I've seen this before. Okay. Let me just reference this, because this came out of the Star Tribune in Minnesota. The federal government denied a request from the state's leaders for more time to get compliant with the new Real ID Act requirement. But see, in that case, it's not going to immediately imperil the ability for those people from Minnesota to board a commercial flight. And now this is getting very frightening, because imagine the possibility of having to need a passport to travel from, we'll say, Minnesota to Idaho, or Minnesota to, you know, it doesn't matter, wherever. But this is where, this is what it's coming down to, where everyone is going to have to be identified.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be done, as you said, biometrically. And the information is going to be going to be held on the biometric cards. Hence the Real ID Act. It's the cards that you're being issued from your driver's license from the DMV are going to be biometric cards for, to a large extent. Barring, or the next step after biometric cards, folks, is an implanted device or a tattoo type device. It's something on the body that will not be removed. That's the next logical step. Because imagine, first of all, you've got 9 states scuttling around trying to be in compliance with the Real ID Act. DHS is saying, okay, we're not going to grant you more time, but we're not going to enforce the laws on the Real ID Act at the moment with you guys. Just because you're slow, all right, but, you know, we're not going to enforce it. That doesn't mean that they're not going to have problems. So there are 9 different states that are problematic for the Real ID Act. And, of course, you know, on the other hand, if you're an illegal, you can just get a driver's license in California, and you don't have to pass security clearance, and you'll be just fine.
And that's what they call it, the secure driver's license and identification. Yeah. They say are a vital component of a holistic national security strategy. The 9/11 Commission recommended that federal government work with other layers of government to solidify and secure government-issued documents, and that the law enforcement must be able to rely on government-issued identification and documents to know that the bearer of such documents is who he or she claims to be, just as you said. And there has been, yep, you know, several updates on this Real ID Act since 2005. It's 11 years since, and it's going to be implemented this year. And you know, this has to do with the TSA, mm-hmm, and the DHS is currently in the process of determining which non-compliant states will receive extensions to comply with Real ID standards mandated by Congress. The Real ID Act authorizes the Secretary of Homeland Security to grant extensions in cases where states provide adequate justification for non-compliance. Federal agencies may accept for official purposes driver's license and identification cards issued by the state, but they don't have to allow you to travel, or they can make you do other things to, you know, as far as getting a passport, or you have to comply with these new standards as a state and as a member of that state, meaning if you, something right, as simple as not having your driver's license updated in, for a few years, could keep you from traveling in states that are compliant.
You know what, Joe, one of the things that people need to understand as well, and need to realize, student loans. You delinquent on your student loan? Hmm. Maybe. I mean, who isn't in the millennial generation delinquent on their student loan, on their burdensome debt? Folks, the IRS is now acting as an agent to deny, as an agent for any government debt. Obviously, they have been, but the IRS can deny you a passport. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see? Now imagine that. Let's say you give the proverbial middle finger to Obamacare and say, I'm not going to be a part of this. My religion prohibits me from being a part of this. The IRS can deny you your passport, as they can deny you for not paying your child support, as for not paying your school loans. They can deny it. So you're actually in a prison country. So you've got a declared socialist running for the presidency, a Marxist, a declared socialist in the form of Bernie Sanders running for the presidency, a Marxist in the form of Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, running, Marxist. You know, Che Guevara. Okay. And then you've got everyone else who's so far left of center. It's just ridiculous. Basically, you've got Reaganomics being pushed in China as opposed to the United States. I mean, how upside down is this picture? It's very upside down. It's crazy.
And, you know, what you said, you know, they can determine what you can do or where you can go based on different financial or other things that they deem. They call access control.
There you go.
And it's meant to hold people or just as we saw, you know, the IRS expanding their ability to tax people outside of the United States who have relinquished their citizenship to citizens in other countries who have lived outside of the United States for longer than a period of time. They're now allowed to go and tax these people when they weren't before. And as you said, if you owe money on student loans or to the IRS, you can be kept from traveling. And I would just urge everybody to look up the Real ID Act and look at the updated information since 2005 and go through it, because it has to do with biometric identification inside these new IDs, these government, what do they call them, government standard IDs now, and the implementation. So if your state is one of the states that doesn't have this new federal standards as their for their ID purposes, you can be held outside of the getting on a plane and traveling inside the country. And this is all part of a Western Hemisphere initiative.
That's thank you for bringing that up.
It's I'm looking for it here. I just had it. But this is a part of a global initiative, and this is all part of what we're going to see coming up real soon, which is you know, the health aspect and financial aspect tied to this. But oh goodness, I just had it. It is and this goes to the UN and international treaties and laws that were signed into place, because I've never heard until this Real ID Act came out, and it's been a while since I've looked at this, but the Western Hemisphere, I don't want to say security initiative, I'll find it here.
Well, I mean, this is the
Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative.
There you go. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to give that correct terminology.
So all of this combined represent, if you're wondering, you know, where the problem areas are, of course, the travel restrictions, as Joe said, and as we talked about, and the gun confiscation in California. I just want to throw another addition in there. A judge can issue an order in California without ever hearing from the person in question if there are reasonable grounds to believe the person is a threat based on accounts from family and police, okay? And since the order can be issued without the gun owner even being present to defend him or herself, confiscation can commence without any notice to the gun owner once the order is issued. So imagine, just imagine that scenario where you are placed, you are deemed a threat without even knowing it, and suddenly, man, you got the SWAT team at your door, or the police at your door, the sheriff's at, well, whoever, and taking your guns. And so people often say, well, it's registration, not confiscation, but registration does lead to confiscation.
I mean, you want to split hairs, surrendering firearms, not confiscating firearms. I mean, it's just a difference in vocabulary. It's the same difference.
And I'm trying to find the name of this idiot that was, in fact, he was imaged on television holding maybe a modified AK or an AR. But I think it was an AR body.
You talking about the news reporter?
Yeah, not the news reporter. The guy from the state's attorney's office, California State's attorney's office.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, you can find it. But really, it's crazy. We really need to be paying attention to this, because people say, well, you know, it can't happen here. Well, it is happening here. And I don't know how many people saw this. Drudge had sent out a Twitter tweet, I guess you call them, right? Earlier today. If there is no law, there are no crimes. Now, you gotta wonder, some of the things that you hear, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Twitter because I really believe that the social engineering wants us to become illiterate. But anyway, what does that mean? Okay. One might wonder, one might suspect that he's referencing the a yet-to-be-revealed gun control executive order. Now, Bloomberg leaked a news report, and you were referencing this, and we kind of skirted this issue, but Bloomberg News leaked this rumor of a gun control executive order today of impending DHS expanded powers that might appear in this New Year's Eve executive order. Now, if I was, let me tell you something, if I was interested in preserving my Second Amendment rights, and if I lived in any state where there was an ability to purchase magazines, multiple round magazines, or ARs or AKs or any semi-automatic weapons, I would probably be out with you know, cash money to buy those items, okay, and ammunition as well, because mark my words, 2016, before the end of 2016 or before the end of 2015 and into 2016, you're going to see this grand move by Obama to actively take our guns away from us. Bloomberg earlier today hinting at it. You got Drudge, his cryptic tweets or tweet. You've got the California Initiative. There's a lot of things adding up, folks. A lot of things that are suggesting that there's something afoot. Not an arm, but a foot going on.
No, absolutely. I wanted to hit this news article, or this important news. Czech president calls influx of refugees to Europe an organized invasion. In his third annual Christmas message since assuming the presidency of the Czech Republic, Czech President Miloš Zeman addressed the subject of the European migrant crisis and called the wave of refugees an organized invasion. Speaking from the Lani presidential chateau in central Bohemia on December 26th, he said, "I am profoundly convinced that we are facing an organized invasion and not a spontaneous movement of refugees. Those who defend the immigration talk of compassion and solidarity, but compassion is possible from the old and primarily for children, but a large majority of illegal migrants are young, healthy men without families. I'm asking, why don't these men take up arms and battle for the freedom of their country against the Islamic State?" Yesterday, you hit on an article from the beginning of the year that talked about this as...
From February, actually a number of them, two. And these were all overseas articles, one from the Daily Mail, one from the Independent. And one was from February, one was from May. Go ahead.
And that, and what they were doing is the ISIS was threatening a invasion...
Yep,
through immigration, and exactly what we see happening today, not only in the European Union but here in the United States, and I've heard from a number of people, you know, saying that they see the influx of immigrants in their towns, in their cities, and that it's concerning to some.
Yep,
and you know, a lot of this isn't covered in the mainstream news, but do some research on Middle Eastern Christian immigrants who are trying to come into this country. They are being blocked from coming into this country. And I'm not sure how exactly that's working out or how they're doing that, but the Christians are being deported while the secular and Islamic Middle Eastern immigrants are being let right in. And how they're making those... how they're differentiating between the two, I'm not sure, you know, if it's something that people admit to being a Christian, you know, or not, or if it's from increased information from, you know, NSA-type surveillance, but they are blocking Christians from coming in. At the same time, they are flooding Europe and the United States with questionable people who have ties to terrorists. And I don't know if you saw this, that the Kansas City Mosque, mosque linked to Muslim Brotherhood, received millions in federal grants.
Oh yeah! Yes. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, this article is from Infowars.com, and I know there's others out there. Mosque linked to Muslim Brotherhood has received millions of dollars in federal grants, And this article is from today.
Right.
The Islamic Center for Greater Kansas City has received over $2.7 million from the Department of Agriculture since 2010.
Now, what in the world is the Department of Agriculture giving grants to a mosque for? What are they growing? Khat? By the way, khat, K-H-A-T. Folks, if you ever walk into one of the corner stores that, you know, the Muslim-owned corner stores, and you see anything wrapped up in banana leaves, and the khat comes into the country usually once a month via JFK, it's, people know about it, but it's kind of like marijuana. It's kind of like Muslim marijuana. It's khat, and there's really, no one's doing anything about it, and it's a drug of choice among people. You chew it. Among other things, you can chew it. It's a leaf like a marijuana plant would be. But a lot of the, and it's an Islamic / Arab thing. It's kind of their thing. But go ahead, sir.
Have you heard of the North American Islamic Trust?
NAIT. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when the, Holy Land Foundation trial was going on, the NAIT, I believe, was named as one of the, and this is from memory, I don't know, was named as like a witness, or it had something at the periphery of the Holy Land Foundation trial.
Well, the property records show that the mosque is owned by the North American Islamic Trust, which acts as a financial holding company for Islamic organizations. It offers Sharia-compliant products to Muslim investors, operates Islamic schools, and owns more than 300 mosques throughout the United States.
Right.
And this is the holding company under this umbrella that received the money from the Department of Agriculture. Now, the article goes on to state that, you know, most of the money went to women and infants for their WIC program. But other reports say that that's not, you know, so clear from the records, but over $2.739 million from the Department of Agriculture since 2010, and they say the money largely went to the mosque's Crescent Clinic that provides services to women and infants and children's, and a nutrition program known as WIC. And I always thought that WIC was a
women, welfare, infants, and children, right,
program. It had nothing to do with Islam or Muslims or Christians or anything. It was just a part of a of the welfare program. But over almost $3 million for Sharia-compliant financial products to Muslim investors, Islamic schools, and over 300 mosques in the U.S. And this was founded in 1973 as an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Student Associations,
MSA,
is the NAIT's most controversial connection is the 2007-2008 Holy Land Foundation terror financing cases,
right,
as you said, along with Muslim Brotherhood-linked organizations like the Society of North America and the Council on Islamic Relationships, CARE. NIT was named a co-conspirator in the federal case but was not indicted at the Holy Land trial.
And the federal government actually got in trouble for publishing the list of unindicted co-conspirators.
Okay. We can't both be
unindicted co-conspirators, which included the Council on American Islamic Relations, which no one wants to talk about because, oh, that's, you know, that's bad. But the NAIT and others were part of that. Now, the North American Islamic Trust is a subsidiary of the ISNA, which is the Islamic Society of North America. And it's a U.S.-based Islamic trust that holds the titles to thousands, well, hundreds, I would say, of Islamic properties. And here's what we found when we were doing some investigation in Buffalo, New York. Here's the deal. The imam, I got to be careful. Okay, here's the deal. Look for a scenario like this. A mosque goes up, or a mosque gets established in a neighborhood. The imam says, well, it doesn't matter what the imam says. Follow the money, because, and also not only follow the money, but look at the properties all around the mosque. Kind of do like concentric circles around the mosque, around the Islamic center. You're going to find very interesting things. There was a case, and I'm not going to get into detail, where this imam of a particular mosque got on the air and says, well, got on a radio station and said, no, I don't, you know, this particular group does not own the mosque or any other properties. Well, when you do a property search under the various names that include the Islamic Society of North America and the National American Islamic Trust, which is NAIT, NAIT, and others, Muslim Brotherhood, it all goes at Muslim Students, the Student Association, MSAF, U.S. and Canada, and all of the offshoots. They're all subsidiaries of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood really was groomed in this country really from the 70s into the present. It was given a pass by George Walker Bush and allowed to exist and flourish. The Muslim Brotherhood was actually supported, in my view anyway, in my personal opinion, was supported by Huma Abedin and Hillary Clinton via the State Department and also the Obama regime, that agenda. So you've got a ton of money going from Saudi Arabia and other countries. You have a ton of money coming from outside of the United States by Muslim countries into the United States in small increments under the radar or supposed radar of the IRS to prop up things like the Muslim Brotherhood that then in turn contribute to the Obama regime and all of the initiatives here inside the United States. Money is being used to build mosques. Saudi Arabian money is being used inside this country to build mosques. And what we have are foothold or strongholds here in the United States behind enemy lines, or within the structure of the United States. And the purpose is to create this environment of sedition to depose our government and institute Sharia law. That's kind of the long and short of it.
All right.
Did I do okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely a lot more background information. And
I'm losing my ears.
And you're right. This is this has ties to so many different organizations and
well, yeah.
Whether terrorist, Muslim Brotherhood, Sharia compliant, and has a track record that shows that from the Palestinian Military Authority to Anwar al-Awlaki, all have
let me see if I can bring something
fell under this NAIT, which is the one of the primary owners of this mosque or users or distributing the money amongst the different places that they get from the government.
I'll say this, the National National Association of Islamic Trust. Again, you folks, you've got to understand that this is integrated into the Western culture and Western society. The NAIT was founded back in 1973 in Indiana by members of the MSA, the Muslim Student Association of U.S. and Canada. It's a 501c3 organization. Okay, that's what NAIT is. And the reason this is important is because it is part of the infrastructure that is feeding the Trojan horse refugees from other countries, Muslim refugees from other countries. What has happened in the 70s and 80s and 90s and the decade of 2000, the infrastructure for the support for the people coming into this country was built back then. NAIT was founded in 1973, as I said, in Indiana by members of the MSA, Muslim Student Associations, which are active all across campuses, all across North America. And what they did, it's a tax-exempt nonprofit endowment that not only subsidizes the construction of new mosques in the United States, but presently claims to hold the mortgages on more than 325 existing mosques, Islamic centers, and Islamic schools in 42 states. And listen to this, a recently classified FBI document I'm going to put up on the screen here momentarily for those watching on YouTube from December 1987 states that, and think about that, December of 87, there it is. How'd you do that? No, that's not the right one. I'll just put it up there. Here it is. Okay, go ahead. It states that they posed a threat to the people in the United States and Canada, or the United States. They support jihad or holy war in the U.S. And this was declassified. This is from Indianapolis, Indiana. It's right on your screen, folks, from December. It was published on December 15th, 1987, just recently declassified, stating that NAIT was organized by the MSA and the leadership of NAIT, MSA, and other Muslim groups are interrelated, with many leaders and members of NAIT having identified as supporters of the Islamic Revolution as advocated by the government of Iran. Their support of jihad, a holy war in the U.S., has been evidenced by the financial and organizational support provided through NAIT from Middle East countries to Muslims residing in the United States and Canada. The bottom line is, this is nothing new, and Obama, and it was, see, this is nothing new. You go back to George H.W. Bush, you go back to the Reagan administration, but in particular George H.W. Bush and Clinton, of course, and George W. Bush in particular, the friends of the Saudis. He's the lip kisser, and Obama's the butt kisser to the Saudis, okay? You know, he kisses the butts of the Saudis and shows his butt to the American people. But this is what we're talking about. They've had 30 years for this to grow and coalesce. The infrastructure has been built. You got MOS being financed by these organizations. There's no overchecks or checks and balances on this. The IRS, they could care less about this. And unless of course you're a Christian 501c3 company, then you're bad. But for NAIT and other organizations, not a problem. So this has been, folks, the infrastructure has been created. It is in full force, and now it is in place and subsidizing and actually funding the Trojan horse refugees coming into the United States.
All right. I don't know if you saw this article or where you want to go from here, but and Ellen Brown is the author of this, A Crisis Worse Than ISIS, Bail-Ins Begin. While the mainstream media focuses on ISIS extremists, the threat that has gone virtually unreported is that your life savings could be wiped out in a massive derivative collapse.
Why not?
Bank bail-ins have begun in Europe, and the infrastructure is in place in the U.S. At the end of November, the Italian pensioner hanged himself after his entire $100,000 savings was confiscated in a bank rescue scheme. He left a suicide note blaming the bank where he had been a customer for over 50 years and had invested in bank-issued bonds, but he might have blamed the EU and the G20's Financial Stability Board,
yep,
as it goes on to say, which have imposed the orderly resolution regime that keeps insolvent banks afloat by confiscating the savings of investors and depositors. Some 130,000 shareholders and junior bondholders suffered losses in the rescue. And this is just a small example of what can happen on a very large scale.
You know, can I ask a question? Okay, did you see the cover of The Economist for 2016?
No.
All right, and let me please, listener. Yeah, it came out in the November, I believe it was. Let me plead to listeners.
I might have seen it then.
If someone can send me a high resolution copy at studio@hagmanhagman.com of the 2016 cover, okay.
Was this about the ones with the mushroom clouds?
Merkel. No, it had Merkel on in the center, front and center. Angela Merkel. Which I believe, and you know, people get hacked off at me for talking about Nazis. If you look at the EU, what's a strong country in the EU? It's Germany, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so who's Merkel? Well, Merkel, the historians can't even agree on her date of birth. And really question her lineage, and I'm going to throw this out there because I don't care. Okay, I do believe it's my professional opinion based on research. I believe Merkel is, you ready for this? She's the illegitimate offspring of Adolf Hitler. You see, when Hitler was in power, and people are going to say, "Oh, can you talk about Nazis again?" Yeah, I am. Well, when Hitler was in power, they collected a lot of his, you know, his essence. Right. And the Dr. Carl, can't remember the guy's name, the Dr. Carl, I sent somebody an email today, Dr. Carl, whoever it was, he was the father of artificial insemination, actual father of artificial insemination. So what happened was, and this is what I believe happened, okay, this is by no means a fact, and I'm not saying it is, but this is just my professional belief based on my research, is Merkel was born actually on Hitler's birthday, April 20th, 1954, not July, like some people say. Again, they can't get her birthday right. From a Rothschild being artificially inseminated by the essence of Adolf Hitler. Now you might think, well, that's just absolutely, you're insane, Doug, you've lost it, get the tinfoil out, and you know, hook, stage left, get out of here. But I'm just saying, so if that's the case, look what's taking place in Germany, the EU, and the larger picture with the G8 and the economy there. Just consider that. Just open your mind and consider that. And you can look at the father of artificial insemination and his close ties to Hitler, and of course, Angela Merkel. And for those people who disagree, hey, feel free to. Look, I don't know if I'm right, but it certainly sounds good, doesn't it? Again.
Yeah. And back to the bail-ins, we've had financial experts on and other people who have said the same exact thing. Under the Dodd-Frank Act, they say this is happening in the U.S. EU. Is there any reason for concern in the U.S.? And they say once your money is deposited in the bank, it legally becomes property of the bank. Yeah, we can show the cover. You want?
Heck yeah, brother.
All right, let's see. This is the cover for The Economist on 2016 edition.
Yeah, in fact, whoever sent that, or Eric, the tech, thank you so much. Regardless, we're going to keep this cover up for the remainder until Stan comes on. I want to do that. You guys take a look at this cover for the world in 2016, cover The Economist, because I do believe it is pertinent and relevant. And folks, you know what? Here's what we'll do. To those industrious people who are looking for something to do, why don't you provide an analysis and send it to us at studio@hagmanandhagman.com. Like, you know, what you see, if the specific things. Now, you know, I saw a different cover. Different version. It had something else in the background. It had something else in the foreground. Are there different covers, folks? I need help. I mean, I don't know. But we'll keep that up until we...
Tomorrow, do you still want to do the year in review show?
Yes, yes. And what we're going to do is we're going to break open the vault, dust off the predictions that were called in and emailed in on 12/31 of 2014 for 2015. Folks, many people had participated in this, and we will go over them, and we will announce what people said and see who got closest to events really taking place. And I know there were some that... very close. And then what we can do is also tomorrow will be our last show of the year. Yes. So why don't we plan on opening the phone lines, and folks, you can also use the contact us form at hagmanandhagman.com. Send us your predictions based on your reasoned research. This has nothing to do with, you know, the occult or new, you know, it has nothing to do with any of that magic stuff. This
God
is all,
willing, at the end of 2016, you know, we'll be able to come back on and do what we're going to do tomorrow.
Yeah, so that'd be kind of cool. So send it in, studio@hagmanandhagman.com, or just go to hagmanandhagman.com on the contact us page, and fire off what you think is going to happen in 2016 based on your recent research and reasonable research. And then we'll go over tomorrow night the predictions for 2015, as well as hopefully take some calls in addition to the emails we get. So it'll be a fun show.
I don't know if you saw this headline, New York City, New Year's Eve military zone.
Huh?
They are putting a huge amount of security, not only at the New Year's Eve celebration in Times Square in New York City, but also unprecedented security for the Rose Bowl parade and bowl game in Pasadena, California, as the threat of terror attacks is... being used as a reason for the increased security in New York City and in California for the college football championship.
Yeah.
But they say that this will be a military zone, and I'm guessing it will be like what we saw or what we see with the conventions and, you know, what we talked about the other day, the ability to make constitutional free zones. But heavily armed anti-terror police to guard Times Square on New Year's Eve, as well as the Rose Bowl parade and game, bowl game in Pasadena. And this just came out today. Heavily armed anti-terror police to guard Times Square on New Year's Eve. And they go through the numbers here. They're going to have, it was a 2,600 extra police officers, or and I'm not sure how they're going to do this, if it's going to be extra or part of the nearly 6,000 police officers, hundreds of them with long guns, radiation detectors, and bomb-sniffing dogs will be guarding Times Square in New York. A year punctuated by terrorist attacks draws to a close, according to the NYPD. They say that the FBI has unveiled plans to protect the more than 1 million people who will throng to the crossroads of the world on New Year's Eve, including multi-layered checkpoints and a new 500-member Critical Response Command Elite Counterterrorism Police Unit launched 2 months ago. We are very, very confident that the New Year's Eve in New York City will be the safest place in the world to be, said Chief James Waters, who is in charge of counterterrorism operations for the police department. Police Commissioner Bill Bratton said investigators have been monitoring intelligence channels for anything that would suggest Times Square could be a target. We are not aware of any threat at this time that we deem credible, he said. I wanted to read that and just, you know, they said this a couple days after Obama said that ISIS was contained and the terror threat was non-existent. We saw the Paris terrorist attacks.
Folks, I mean, look, I went to Times Square. I was in Times Square one New Year's Eve, all right, and it's just, you can recreate the Times Square experience at home. All you need to do is invite all of the idiots that you know from the bar down the road and throw them into a small room and then throw yourself into that room. Hey, throw yourself into that room and just say, hey, come on, let's just bounce around the, let's just bounce around. And this is what we're, I mean, you can recreate that experience. It's ridiculous. Now, if you are a VIP closer to the, you know, closer to the, where you need to go, or, you know, where the action is, where the ball is, and where the celebrities are, then it's a little bit different. But I never had VIP tickets. But the bottom line is this. Trump is going to be there. I'd be very, it's my understanding Trump is going to be there. I'd be very cautious, folks, very cautious. If you're going to go, be very cautious. But also, I'd be watching very closely at all the dignitaries are going to be there, because I do believe there's a threat.
They're going to have,
I'm just not saying it,
long gun teams stationed different distances from the actual center of this. So they're going to have snipers all over the place.
Yeah.
As well as uniformed officers inspecting bags, magnometers and hand ones, counterterrorism officials with chemical and radiation detectors, as well as a team of long guns will be stationed 50 yards away in case anyone tries to breach the entry point without going through security. They'll have canine units, 65 massive spectator pens, and screening and rescreening checkpoints set up.
Yeah.
You'll have checkpoints inside of checkpoints.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Is this how we want to live? Is this how we want to live? Do we want to trade our security for this crap? I don't think so.
And over 1,000 cameras will be transmitting images throughout the night.
Yeah, it's BS.
And you know, the terrorism is the reason for this, and ISIS, which primarily is a creation of the U.S., and, you know, we've been over this hundreds of times, from the Mujahideen to Al-Qaeda to the terrorism we see in the Middle East from the destabilization and from the U.S. intervention policies and direct backing of these terrorists. We are at the top of the hour already. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Stan Deo. And folks, stay tuned. If you've been listening to Stan in the last couple of weeks, he's going to come on and give us some new information that he found.
We'll see what happens with this.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
Where he believes he found information on the Antichrist.
Yeah.
So stay with us. And if you want to go to Stan's website, standeo.com is the site. Go to the show images icon on the right-hand side of the page and get that open, ready to go. And we'll be back with Stan on the other side. Stay with us.
is the Global Star Radio Network.